Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Shasai and I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston orders Nova Scotians to stay out of the woods as fires burn out of control in the province. He's also asking Ottawa for help.
We fill out the paperwork and we go through the channels, but at the same time, it's my hope that the Prime Minister and members of Cabinet and members of Parliament recognize that there's a time for action, and the time for action is right now.
And open fire bans are in effect also in most of the province of Quebec. Conditions could spark a fire at any time.
Spring-like and summer-like conditions have set in along with warm weather and dryness, and that's really what's fueling the vulnerability of our forests and all these forest fires that we're experiencing.
Sexual assault allegations from two Quebec high schools trigger a call for a provincial framework law. Many other cases reported. This could become a Pandora's box.
How can we have failed all these children without blinking an eye?
And logging sports wane in some parts of British Columbia, but in Castlo, they are growing stronger than ever.
So I had ladies axe throw, ladies stock saw, ladies underhand, Jack and Jill.
Welcome to Viewpoints. Nice to have you with us.
Local news nationwide.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Forest fires are hitting hard in Nova Scotia. As of June 1st, three of them were still out of control. The province's government has banned all activity in wooded areas. Across the province, Premier Tim Houston announced the measures, which will include all recreational and commercial activity. And last Thursday, Houston officially asked Ottawa for help to fight the largest forest fires in the province's history. Ed Halverson is in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston wants to ensure every bit of available help is coming to fight the largest forest fires in the province's history. A letter sent from the Premier's office to the Prime Minister Wednesday lays out a long list of needs, including military personnel and equipment, helicopters, vehicles, and temporary housing for firefighters coming from out of province. An update provided by the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables Thursday morning shows approximately 20,000 hectares are burning across 16 sites. The largest wildfire is in Barrington Lake in Shelburne County at just over 18,000 hectares. During Thursday's briefing, Premier Houston said the list of requests included in the letter is not meant to be exhaustive. He is asking the federal government to inform Nova Scotia of other supports that could be helpful instead of waiting for a request. In the letter, he states, quote, "You know your resources best and know what can help in a situation like this. Given the seriousness, any other resources at the disposal of the federal government that we haven't mentioned but could help, please send. We ask for your common sense and support. If we have used the wrong terminology in any of our asks, or there are issues with the format of the ask, please be proactive and help us assist struggling Nova Scotians as quickly as possible." End quote. Houston says he learned lessons from Hurricane Fiona in September of 2022 that he doesn't want to see repeated in this emergency.
Once we'd kind of been through the urgency of the crisis, in my discussions with the Prime Minister, he looked me in the eye at one point and said that Nova Scotia didn't fill out the proper forms, and that's why the support hadn't come as quickly. I, of course, disagreed with that assessment, but suggested that even if that assessment were true, there's a time to act, and there's a time to get more fulsome paperwork later, and there was a time to act, and it was missed. So with that experience in mind, I was not willing to leave any room for a repeat when people's houses were literally burning. So we fill out the paperwork, and we go through the channels, but at the same time, it's my hope that the Prime Minister and members of Cabinet and members of Parliament recognize that there's a time for action, and the time for action is right now.
The Premier's letter also looks ahead for ways the federal government can support Nova Scotia once the fires are out. The province is looking for early access to federal disaster relief funding and commitments to match Red Cross donations and rebuild critical infrastructure. Houston also asks for Ottawa to provide a temporary leave benefit to assist people unable to work because of being displaced or firefighters taking time from their jobs. The premier said in a normal year, Nova Scotia would face fewer than 100 wildfires. This year, there have already been 196 and counting. He said the increase in number and size of the fires has overwhelmed provincial resources well beyond what they are normally prepared to fight. And while thousands of people have been displaced, Houston says the situation could be much worse if not for the bravery and dedication of everyone involved.
We've never faced wildfires like this before, and we have them all at the same time. I think the remarkable thing that people should not lose sight of is zero missing people, you know, zero reported deaths, zero serious injury. I mean, that says a lot about the professionalism of the response.
Fire crews are fighting a forecast calling for dry conditions and temperatures in the 30 degrees Celsius range Thursday. A reprieve may be on the way, as Environment Canada is calling for showers to begin overnight Friday and rain continuing to fall over the weekend through Tuesday. A team of Nova Scotia firefighters is expected to return from the Northwest Territories to join the effort this weekend. The province has already received support from other provinces in the form of water bombers from Newfoundland and Labrador and New Brunswick, and firefighting personnel from Prince Edward Island. Another press briefing is scheduled for Thursday afternoon to provide an update on how the firefighting efforts are proceeding. I'm Ed Halverson.
A footnote to let you know that the information in Ed's report dates from June 1st. The situation is quickly changing and could be different as we speak. And in Pontiac, Quebec, an open fire ban is also in effect. The ban is in effect across the province as well as in the Outaouais region. This is due to a heat wave creating dangerous conditions in the region's forested areas. The ban, enacted by the Ministère des Ressources Naturelles et des Forêts, forbids open fires in or near forests throughout most of the province. Caleb Nickerson speaks with Mélanie Morin, information officer with Quebec's Forest Firefighting Agency,
Fire danger index throughout the province has been very high in the last few days, became extreme over the weekend, and is forecasted to remain extreme at least till the end of the week. This caused the SUPFIR, along with the ministry, to put in place an open air fire ban. This has been in place since Sunday night, 7 o'clock, and includes the entire Outaouais and Pontiac area.
And generally speaking, how many consecutive days sort of without rain or with warm weather does it take for one of these bans to come into effect?
It's hard to quantify in a number of days. It depends also on the time of year. We may have, you know, several days of warm, hot, heat wave in July or August, but there's a very high level of humidity and there may have been a lot of rain previously. Right now, what is going on is that we have high temperatures for this time of year, very, very low relative humidity. It is really dry out. We've not had a lot of rain over the last week. And because it is springtime and not all the greenery is out across the province, it is perfect for creating tinder dry conditions in the forest.
And so far this year, I guess it'd be the spring so far, how many fires and what kind of size are we talking about here for the province?
Across Quebec, there have been 196 fires so far, whereas the average is usually 188, so we see that we're slightly above. For the number of hectares affected, 316, whereas the average is usually 185. However, that don't think tells the entire picture. A lot of that has been just in the last week or so, and we had a very slow start to the season. April, as everyone can remember, was very wet and rainy. A lot of people were dealing with flooding. However, the last week or so, spring-like and summer-like conditions have set in along with warm weather and dryness, and that's really what's fueling the vulnerability of our forests and all these forest fires that we're experiencing.
So you said it's quite significantly more as far as acreage there?
There is, yes, absolutely. It's been busy in the last few days. We've seen several larger fires throughout the province.
And as far as the Outaouais region itself goes, has it largely been avoided? Or
we've had a pretty quiet weekend, even up to yesterday. Today, we've had several calls where we've had to go out and help municipal firefighters. And again, all fires that were human-caused. So we ask people to adhere to the fire ban. There are no campfires, no cooking fires, no burn piles, no brush piles, no open flame that is wood-fed at the moment.
And if people are looking to find out more about this information, where exactly can they find you guys?
Our website has an interactive map with all the latest information. You can find the fires and our activity and all bands and where they are, supfer.qc.ca. As well, we're on most social media platforms.
Hello, I'm Andrew Dow in Six Nations Ontario. You are tuned in to Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
Next, we stay in Quebec for a story that we caution you contains descriptions of sexual violence toward children and youth, which may be disturbing for some of our listeners. The story focuses on sexual assault allegations from two Quebec high schools, which have triggered a call for a provincial framework law. Parents, students, elected officials, and concerned citizens gathered in front of the Centre de Services Scolaires de Montréal on May 19 to demand that the provincial government take immediate action and implement a framework law to prevent and combat sexual violence in Quebec's primary and secondary schools. This after an investigative piece published by Quebec newspaper Le Devoir exposed allegations of sexual violence at Louise Trichet High School in Montreal and Massé-Vanier High School in Cowansville. La Voix des Jeunes Compte, the Voice of the Youth Count, a collective with the mandate to fight sexual violence in Quebec schools, coordinated the press conference. They have been working for the past 5 years to get a framework law adopted at the provincial level to prevent and properly address sexual violence in primary and secondary schools. A framework prevention law was adopted by the provincial government in 2017, but only for CEGEPs and universities. Known as Bill 151, the law determines the elements that the school's policy must set out, such as safety measures, mandatory training, a complaint procedure, psychosocial, and support services. Journalist Taylor McClure first spoke at the local level with Jennifer Hopkins, a parent of an alleged sexual assault victim that has been advocating for change ever since the allegations at Massé-Vanier High School came to light. Hopkins emphasized that children don't have a voice to stick up for themselves when it comes to situations as complex as sexual violence, making the framework law that much more necessary.
This is happening in our schools, and parents and students are fed up because they don't know where to go. They don't know who to speak to. For myself, I feel like I've been screaming for 2.5 years without getting any assistance, help, anything. And so La Voix des Jeunes Compte are helping this and trying to propose a law. The same law that was passed in 2017 and put into the post-secondary school system. The collective isn't asking for them to reinvent the wheel. It's basically taking, it's called Bill 151, and it was put into post-secondary schools in 2017, and a huge amount of money was put into it, and it is the prevention of sexual violence and how to deal with sexual violence at the post-secondary school level, and it involves trauma response training. Professors and people that work at the school have to be trained and update their training every year on how to deal with sexual violence, sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, how to, when a student comes to you, what to ask, what not to ask, the reporting structure, how to look at power dynamics within the school and how those affect sexual violence. So it's already laid out, completely laid out, and we are just asking for it to be implemented in the primary and the secondary schools where sexual violence is happening. Mm-hmm. And especially at the younger levels, they don't have the voice to speak up for themselves. They don't have the know-how. A 10-year-old's not reading policies and procedures and knowing who to talk to about what's going on. So if anything, it's needed more at the primary and the secondary school levels. That's what we need in the schools. And I think it would benefit our community, our children, our young adults. It would benefit the teachers and the administration because it would give them a clear framework on where to go and what to do when this stuff happens.
Taylor McClure did reach out to the Eastern Township School Board for comment, but they declined a request for an interview as a result of ongoing investigations. Anastasia Spanis, another parent at the Massive Vanier High School in Cowansville, that's near Montreal in the Eastern Townships, has been supporting the students that came forward with allegations of sexual assault experience at the school. Here she is with journalist Taylor McClure.
We are going to be surprised. How can we have failed all these children without blinking an eye? It's not just the sexual violence at the school. It's the bullying, how they treat girls between the boys, how they deal with everything in that school. All the parents who I've spoken to want a cleanup of all this stuff. The government needs to open their eyes and say, oh my God, this is not just one case, exclusive case. We're talking about two schools, two major accusations, and now there's more coming out. It's not just our school, there's other schools. So the government needs to say, okay, yeah, it's happening in every school and it starts at the young age. So we need these laws in there. It's a simple yes. Schools are the second home to all our children. We leave them in the care of the schools. It's their responsibility to have it safe for them. You freak out over vaping, but you're not taking care of the serious cases that need to be taken care of. That's where the laws, with those laws, it would take care of these problems. From sexual violence down to the bullying, it's like a domino effect that it's going to take care of a lot of problems once these laws are put into place. And the government just has to say yes. And parents need to step up and stop being so close-minded and saying, okay, no, we're not going to talk about that. It's not appropriate. Kids are having sex at the age of 10. They're having babies at 13 because us parents are not speaking to our kids about sex, about safety, protection. What's consent? So you have to educate from a young age because it starts from kindergarten. It starts at daycare.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
We turn now to the other end of the country where the whine of chainsaws and smell of green poplar filled the air in Caslow, British Columbia on the May long weekend as 72 athletes competed in logger sports on the shore of Kootenay Lake. The Caslow logger sports have been held there since 1974. Hundreds of spectators come to the town of 1,000 people to watch professional athletes and novices participate in sports that exemplify the area's heritage and current economy. Competitors are local, but also from places like Horsefly, Williams Lake, Calgary, Montana, and New Zealand. Most logging towns in the interior of BC used to have one form of logging days or another, but many don't anymore. Revelstoke's last Timber Days, which was also held on the May long weekend, was in 2019. In Revelstoke, we're lucky enough to have Megan Dooling working with us, and she went to Caslow, about 200 kilometers south of Revelstoke. She came back with this great story.
The whine of chainsaws can be heard throughout Caslow on the May long weekend, when hundreds of spectators and competitors flood to the town of 1,000 people to watch the logging sports competitions.
Danielle's going to want to push that.
Arrive at the fairgrounds and enter a whole world.
Alrighty, those women are swinging those 6-pound razor blades between their feet. If it looks dangerous, that's because it is, but you will notice every competitor does have to wear protective clothing.
This year, there were 72 competitors. Many were local. Others came from places like Williams Lake, Horsefly, Calgary, Montana, and New Zealand. On Saturday, there are events for novice and intermediate competitors, and on Sunday, professional athletes compete.
So these are your professional athletes that you're going to see that are likely traveling the full circuit of the year. They're probably traveling into the States, and a lot of them are traveling worldwide as well. My name is Andrea Hand. I am the chair of Caslow Logger Sports. I absolutely love when the crowd recognizes these athletes and are just wowed by them, as they should be. These are decorated athletes. These are people, some people that are here have traveled the world, beat world records, own world titles. They are the top of the top. And for Caslow to have them continuously come back, I mean, it's almost just it's just so flattering. It's so absolutely overwhelming that they choose us. The big one, especially for the crowd as well, is the Open Unlimited Hot Saw. That one kind of comes with a big bucket of bragging rights. Those machines can be worth upwards of $10,000. And they're not built in your backyard. These are, you know, hundreds of hours built filing these chains. These are very specific people that build and tune these motors. There's a lot of pride in Open Unlimited Hot Saw for sure. You're typically going to see basically a dirt bike motor that's been pulled out. Then you're going to send it to a guy like Dennis Calhoun, and he is going to make this thing run like it shouldn't. You're going to attach a bar to this beast. Oh, they're 250cc, by the way. You're going to attach a bar to this beast, and then you're going to build a chain. And if you're the godfather, Carl Bischoff, you're going to spend hundreds of hours building that chain with people constantly spying on you and wanting to know your techniques. So you need two things for the Open Unlimited Hot Saw. You need a big beast of a machine that runs, and you need a chain that cuts. They have to take three cuts within 6 inches of wood. So one cut down, one cut up, one cut down. And believe it or not, this can be done and has been done in anywhere from the range of like 4.5 to 6.5 seconds. That's how fast these things can run. Now, mind you, there's some other things that come into play there. What kind of wood it is, what diameter it is. So there's a few other aspects, but these things run fast.
This year, the Caslow Logging Sports hosted 5 Canadian championships. Novice double block, intermediate underhand chop, ladies axe throw, ladies choker race, and ladies open unlimited hot saws.
That's a story, because last year...
Here's Canada's new axe throwing champion.
I didn't hit the target once. So I've been working hard on it, and thanks to Carl Bischoff for some coaching and... Yeah.
Over 70 companies and individuals sponsor the Caslow Logging Days. This allows them to host the Canadian Championship events and give out cash prizes. The professional athletes get $50 a point. First place is 5 points. And the Canadian Championships get a minimum of $100 a point. Andrea Hand is a paramedic, but she comes from a logging family. Along with chairing the Caslow Logging Sports, she MCs and competes. This year, she was in 13 competitions.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, let's maybe just go to ladies' events. So I had ladies' axe throw, ladies' stock saw, ladies' underhand, ladies' standing, Jack and Jill. I participated in all the local events, and I also had some intermediate events that I did on Saturday that included an intermediate 100cc hot saw and a single buck.
What's your favorite one to do?
Underhand, by far. Underhand chop. Underhand chop, you typically have about 11 inches of diameter wood underneath your feet. You're going to cut 2 footholds so that you can stand on it properly. We draw some, you know, mildly grade 2 mathematical lines on it. And you're going to open a face in a V. You're going to cut halfway through in a specific pattern with your racing axe, and you flip around on that log and finish it up. There's a lot of technical side to it. There's a lot that can go right, and there's so much that can go wrong. So it's a great event every time.
Revelstoke's last Timber Days was in 2019. It used to be held on the May long weekend, too. Now the Forestry Museum has taken over the event. Karen Wadey is the secretary of the museum. In an email, she said this year the museum will host a one-day event on September 16th. Instead of having logging competitions, a group called the Laughing Loggers will come to town and put on a show. Wadey said this will eliminate the need for as many volunteers. Many communities that used to have logging days no longer do.
So the West Kootenays was actually very famous for having multiple logging shows. There used to be another one just 40 minutes north. There was one in the Slocan that ran for quite some time. Our shows ran since 1974. I think there's a lot of reasons why shows start and stop, even when our industry in these areas is logging. This is an obvious place to have a logger sports show. This is the industry that is in this town. It was founded by loggers. That's the whole idea. They just wanted to have a day to have some fun, and then we grew and evolved. And we've been so fortunate for 49 years and running that our committee has changed hands, and we've introduced new faces throughout the years, but we've stayed together. Now, I want to say we do have an original face that has been with this committee and or part of organization for Castle Logger Sports, and his name is Kim Planetin, and we still have the pleasure of having him on our committee. I'm 38 years old, and I've been participating in the organization of this show for 6 years, but two of those were COVID, so 4 years, if we look at it. And each year, as I get to know my committee more and more, and a lot of these people are people that I've known for years prior throughout my life, each year I am in absolute awe of their knowledge and what they bring to the table. It is so humbling. I can honestly say that every year that I work with them, I leave a better skilled person, not only at organizing this show, but just at management in general.
I mean, I feel like in a lot of communities, like Revelstoke, where I'm living now, we know the heritage there, but it's a lot shinier than it used to be. And Caso, I feel like, is more, I don't know, you wear your history so gracefully. It's not like put on or anything like that, I notice. But why is it still important to have this support and carry on this heritage?
A big part of this is going back to our committee, and with the years and years of experience that they have there. Most of these guys are loggers. Glenn Erickson is a lifelong bushman, faller, firefighter. They really put a lot of emphasis on keeping this as logging sports rather than timber sports, and that's the professional sport that's been coined by Still. By keeping this in the logging sports category, it just speaks to our heritage. And it speaks volumes that we don't even need to address or explain. People love it. They see the history. They come for it. The wood isn't perfect. We don't lathe our wood. It's all done with axes. We go fall all those trees. We process them, bring them here, size them. All of the saw wood is sized with axes and chainsaws. This is all hand labor. So the idea of getting a block that isn't perfect for you to chop is the idea of being out in the bush. And you're just not going to see two of the same tree. So just really pulling from that logging history.
In Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.
First heat will be Andrea Hand on one. Is Nikita here? Okay, it is literally spelled different. That's what you got, right? Don't worry about it.
And this concludes this edition of Viewpoints. Our reporters this week were Ed Alverson, Taylor McClure, Caleb Nickerson, and Megan Dooling. National editors Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, broadcast on your local radio station, and online at canada-info.ca. Some journalists are working for the LGI in English, also in French, and soon in Spanish. They produce tons of stories every week, so please check them out on canada-info.ca. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. It was great to have you with us. Until next week, ciao.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints. Check out our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.